In a unanimous decision last week, the Kentucky Supreme Court ruled that a Fayette County ordinance prohibiting begging on public streets is unconstitutional, citing the First Amendment, and that those homeless who may be soliciting are actually crying out for help. In this week's Eastern Standard, we'll hear from officials in Lexington, as well as directors of two homeless shelters, and even from a homeless youth. And we hope to get an update on efforts to relocate the city's services for homeless persons. We'd also like to hear from you. Have you ever been homeless, or are you right now? How did you overcome homelessness? Write to us right now, WEKU Eastern Standard at gmail.com. Post your comment on the WEKU Facebook page or send a tweet at WEKUEST. In just a little while, we'll open the phones as well. It's time for Eastern Standard, right after the latest news from NPR. From the studios of WEKU on the campus of Eastern Kentucky University, this is Eastern Standard. Hello, I'm John Hingsbergen. Homelessness is visible on the streets of Kentucky, more specifically in the bigger cities such as Lexington, Louisville, Frankfort, and Covington, maybe to some extent in Bowling Green. But whether or not, the number of homeless in our state seems to be growing and proper solutions are always being considered. This week on our program, we're discussing homelessness in the Commonwealth with a specific focus on Central Kentucky and the Lexington area with our guests. And we're encouraging you to be part of our conversation. We're interested in knowing if you've ever experienced homelessness, if someone in your family has been homeless, maybe you yourself have been, maybe you're homeless right now, and we're interested in your definition of homelessness. Of course, in many situations, people get help from family, but what does homelessness mean to you, and what can we do about homelessness? That is our topic on this week's show. We're going to encourage you to send us an email at WEKUEasternstandard@gmail.com, post on our Facebook page or on the WEKU website at WEKU.fm, and in just a few minutes, we'll open the phone lines as well. With us in the studio this morning, we have first up Fallon Curtis, and Fallon is Associate Director of Arbor Youth Services in Lexington. Arbor Youth Services provides safe alternatives for at-risk children, youth, and their families through services and referrals that promote positive growth and development. Fallon, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me here.
We're going to hear more from Fallon in just a few minutes in the second segment of our program, and we're going to meet a homeless young person by telephone. For now, we're going to talk with Charlie Lanter and Jenny Ramsey as well. And on the line is Jenny. Jenny is director of Catholic Action Center and Community Inn. She just gave a presentation at the Emergency Food and Shelter Grant Program, where all organizations were gathered this morning on this Thursday. She is joining us live from Lexington at Catholic Social Services right now. Jenny Ramsey, thank you so much for being with us.
Well, it's a pleasure. I wish I could be there with you in person.
We do, too, but we will make that happen another time. And Charlie Lanter is director of the Office of Homelessness Prevention and Intervention for Lexington and Fayette County. We hear from Charlie frequently when stories of homelessness occur in our community. Charlie, thank you for being with us.
Thanks for having us.
And let me begin by asking Charlie for an overview. As the guy responsible for the services provided by the city of Lexington and Fayette County, what is the scope of homelessness in this region in central Kentucky? To how many people are homeless? How many people is your agency or your office in touch with? And let's talk in general about the kind of services that the city and the county provide.
Sure. Well, if to answer your question about how many people are homeless, it's really important to answer one of the earlier points you made, which is how do you define homelessness? Because that can really vary, and it affects how you calculate that number. Homelessness can be someone who's living on the streets, but it could also be a family with children who is doubled up with a relative and has, you know, a fixed amount of time they can stay there, but then they have to get out. So the homelessness is impending, and the family's still essentially in crisis. When we, as our office, look at the numbers, often we're focused on the definition that the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development uses for homelessness, which is people who are living on the streets, literally, people who are living in emergency shelters, or people who are in transitional housing programs. And when you use that definition, the number of people in Fayette County experiencing homelessness runs between 1,000 and 1,200, depending on the year. It's really fluctuated within that range over the last couple of years. We've seen it go down a little. We've seen it go up a tad. But it tends to run within that range over the past few years.
And that's based on how much of the population is 1,000, 1,200 out of how many?
Well, in Lexington and Fayette County, you've got, I think it's approximately 325,000. But if you broaden the definition and you start to include households that are meeting what we would call the Department of Education definition of homelessness, which would include someone who's doubled up, someone who's couch surfing is a good phrase for it, which is really common among families and youth, then you're adding significantly more people to the mix. You may have heard some stories last fall that the Herald Leader did on Fayette County schools and how they were seeing an increase in the number of homeless students. And their number was, I think, 700 to 900 students who'd experienced homelessness. And actually, most of those would not have fallen into the number I gave you of 1,000 to 1,200 because they're meeting a different definition of homelessness. So it seems crazy that homelessness would be that complex just even in calculating how many people there are, but it really varies. And you know, the stereotypical image of a person sitting on a street corner who needs help is just one small element of homelessness in our community.
Are there standards or are there figures that you can compare with other cities, such as Louisville, such as Cincinnati, such as Indianapolis, such as Nashville?
Yeah, when we look at other communities, peer communities, what we find is, you know, best we can tell, we're pretty comparable to cities our size. We may have been, at least within the last few years, slightly above what you would expect for a community our size. We've been trending down a little bit in some of those totals. But then up in other subcategories, we have fallen below Louisville in our official count, which, you know, just a couple of years ago, we were above Louisville. And when you consider the significantly larger size, that would have been something to be concerned about for Lexington. But we have a number of factors that impact Lexington and how many people experience homelessness here, many of which are beyond just our community. You know, our city is host to a regional mental health hospital. It's host to several major medical centers. It is a community that has very low unemployment. So that's very attractive to people for the same reasons it would be attractive to anyone who's not homeless, you know, to come here seeking opportunity, seeking education, seeking jobs and better housing, a better life for themselves. And there's a lot of low-income communities near Lexington. You know, several of the poorest counties in the United States are within a short drive of Lexington. So in some of those places, if you find yourself homeless, you might be better off in Lexington.
Because so that actually happens. People will say, I'll move to Lexington maybe to get a better life.
Sometimes they're coming there looking for a better life. In some cases, maybe they were brought there for medical treatment or mental health treatment. And when that treatment was completed, it was better just to stay in Lexington as opposed to going back to a situation of dire poverty or homelessness where they came from. So those are some of the things that drive why we might be a little above average for a community our size.
Let's turn to Jenny Ramsey, director of the Catholic Action Center and the Community Inn. And Jenny, let's talk about the services being provided to homeless persons in Lexington and Fayette County. I assume you have a close relationship with Charlie and his office at City Hall.
Well, Charlie is a good friend. We are not part of any city government services, but we all work together.
What is that relationship?
Catholic worker.
So your funding, Jenny, comes what?
From the community.
From the city?
No government funding. No, we won't take that government funding because we need to be able to handle the folks that the funding sources can't help. We're here to fill in the cracks. And we began 17 years ago doing that. And, you know, the cracks get larger, they get smaller. There's a coming and going that's gone on for the past 17 years. But I would say that our, if we are to look at the face of who is now experiencing homelessness, the sadness that I see is they're more disabled than the elderly because as baby boomers are growing older and do not have the family surrounding them, there are many that end up on the streets. And so, yes, we get them from Eastern Kentucky. You, at the beginning, I can talk to you about from 1996 on. That's when I've been on the streets.
That's a pretty good pretty good scope of time.
Well, it's hard to believe it is. I like to think it was yesterday. But if we go back then, we would not have people from Eastern Kentucky as much. What has happened to the fabric of the families in Eastern Kentucky? Because everybody used to have the crazy Uncle Fred or the Aunt Susie who stayed with a family because she couldn't make it on her own. You know, families took care of each other. And that has broken down in Eastern Kentucky to a sad amount because of the increase in drugs and because of the increase in people feeling that the family and their community need to care for those who are possibly addicted, possibly mentally ill, physically ill, and the economy. And that's the other thing. When we had the Great Recession hit, that's when we started seeing the increase. We used to be able to call up the grandmother in Eastern Kentucky and say, your grandson is here on the streets. And she would say, we've been looking for him, and we're going to come up and pick him up. And sadly now, there is no, that connection is not there. In very few cases it is. But basically they come to Lexington to find, just as Charlie said, we've got more resources here as far as possibility of work. I mean, with Keeneland, when they open, we have a great influx of folks who need a place to stay. They're coming to work, but they don't have the money to stay at a motel. And what we are is, you know, we welcome all. So whether it be the more fragile or whether it be those folks who just don't have a place to stay. But we have seen changes. You know, and there are disturbing changes in the fact that it means that it's harder for not as many folks have family members. They have been disconnected, and they're disenfranchised from their community,
wow,
whether it's Lexington or whether it's from Eastern Kentucky.
There's so many different directions we can go with this conversation, but before we need to take our first break of the program, let's talk briefly about the Kentucky Supreme Court ruling last week related to panhandling, begging on the streets, essentially. What does that mean for the homeless community or for the services provided to homeless persons in the area? Charlie?
I think Lexington will continue to do what it's been doing, which is investing very heavily in innovative and effective solutions for people. Our primary goal has always been to prevent people from experiencing homelessness in the first place, to help those who feel like they have no other options to be able to find a way to get off the streets if that's what they choose to do. You know, the panhandling ordinance is no more. I mean, officially, it does not exist for all intents and purposes. We will continue to encourage folks to consider, you know, supporting organizations directly as opposed to giving cash to someone just because you don't know their personal situations. Some may need it. Some may have some challenges that giving cash to them could hurt them. You know, but our focus primarily is and always has been on how do we help those individuals who are homeless find solutions to get off the street.
Jenny, 30 seconds, your reaction to that Supreme Court ruling.
Oh, I was delighted. It is upholding the First Amendment rights for those who are the most disenfranchised. Do I like panhandling? Of course not. I agree with Charlie 100%, but they do have that right. And when their rights start to disappear, other people's rights start to disappear.
We're going to take a short break. This is Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. We're talking about homelessness in the Commonwealth of Kentucky. You're welcome to be part of our conversation at 800-621-8890. Send us an email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Have you ever been homeless? Have you experienced homelessness in your family or among close friends? 800-621-8890, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Send a tweet at WEKUEST. It's Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations, Homelessness in the Commonwealth. Our discussion this week, 800-621-8890, WEKUEasternStandard@gmail.com is the email address. Let me welcome to the studios once again, first up, Fallon Curtis, who is Associate Director of the Arbor Youth Services in Lexington. And with us on the line now is James Keeling. James is 18 years old. Comes from what we would call, I guess, a broken family situation and has experienced homelessness. James, thank you so much for being with us this morning.
Hello.
Hey, James, thank you. Thank you for being on the phone with us. We're going to ask you to tell us a little bit about your story. I'm told that you're from LaRue County and that you've been in Lexington. You've been homeless, that I guess you've now finished high school. You're getting ready to go to college.
sir. I'm from Paducah, Kentucky.
From Paducah. Okay.
Yes, sir.
What brought you to Lexington?
Yes, I've been in state's care for a very long time, and what brought me to be homeless actually was I did some dumb things back when I was in one of state care facilities, and it got me kicked out. I did something that I'm not really proud of, but I got sent here to Lexington afterwards after that. But I don't have any family that I don't have my family members. They're divorced. They're broken. That type of stuff.
Hmm. So no one you could call on. We were talking earlier that, you know, in the past there were situations where someone might be having difficulties, and their grandparent or someone in their family, aunts or uncles, could be called and said, hey, your relative is having problems. There's no one that you could call on when you needed help.
I can call my mother, and I'm so glad I still have her support, but I can't come home.
Hmm. Why can't you come home?
Well, it's a complicated problem because, you know,
We're not going to pry into your personal life. If there's anything you're not comfortable talking about, we certainly won't go there,
thank
James.
You.
All right.
Yeah.
But I'm just curious again, James, trying to get a handle on you. In a sense, you're representing hundreds, I'm sure, of other young people in this area. You're 18 years old. You're not a 12-year-old, 13-year-old child. I assume there are people that young who are homeless in our area. There are others.
My twin is also homeless.
Your twin?
See, I've been in state's care all my life.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when I got moved to Lexington, this was all new.
Wow.
I did some things, broke into some houses. I was trying to get away from the facility. And, you know, my mom couldn't really do nothing about it. You know, I put her through so much stress, I don't even want to go back home with her.
Wow.
Because, you know, I don't want her to overstress and wind up in a hospital. I'm not very proud of what I've done, but it probably was for the best that I got moved to Lexington
and
from LaRue County.
Are we correct right now that things are on the upswing for you? Good things are starting to happen in your life?
Oh, yes. I'm about to get housed. I've just finished high school not too long ago. I was kind of sad when they, I had a guardian, like they put me in guardianship, so it got me off the jail sentences that I was about to take. And when I got on guardianship, I couldn't go to school. Like they were going to get me GED classes and stuff. So I decided to you know, instead of listening to my parent guardian, I decided to take things in my own hands. I decided to go to the high school and get my transcripts and stuff. I did that, and I got my high school education. I just completed high school in December.
Wow. Congratulations on that, James. James, yeah. With us, I understand you know Fallon Curtis here. Fallon?
Yes, sir.
let's talk about Fallon. Let's talk about James and actually how his story represents that of so many others in the community. How typical is James' story?
Unfortunately, James' story is pretty typical. Our agency serves youth from many different areas as far as foster care, homeless, and runaway youth. And I think James is a perfect example of a strong young man that, yes, has made mistakes, but has also experienced issues with the systems, areas where he could have had more opportunities throughout his life. And I think that what he shares is unfortunately typical of what's happening across the state with many of our youth. We've experienced an increase in youth aging out of the system with nowhere to go, as James had stated.
Well, you talk about aging out of the system. What is the difference? For instance, he's 18 years old, legally an adult. He's able to make decisions for himself if he chooses to do so. What about those who are under 18 years old and the relationship there? How do you even provide services for people who are not legally adults?
Our shelter actually has a 10-bed capacity where we serve youth who are under 18. And that can look very different for each youth. But if they are unaccompanied and we cannot locate a parent or a guardian, we involve the state to possibly take custody. There are issues of abuse where, again, the state must be involved. But there are also issues where family conflict causes the youth to run away multiple times or just want to leave the house, or as we're often used to now, the police bringing the youth to our facility because they can no longer stay in the home, at least for the time being. I think the issue of poverty, the issue of family violence, domestic violence, a lot of those things play into why we have youth who are homeless or run away. But we do... Oh, sorry, James.
Yeah, a part of that as well, being in state's care and being, you may think that those kids have it made, but they don't always have it made. Mm-hmm. That's why I did the things that I did that got me sent to Lexington. They could no longer keep me in the facility that I was in because I kept running away and I got charges pressed on me. It was because I was trying to get away from them.
And James,
so my story still aligns with what some of the stuff that you're talking about, Ms. Fallon.
So, James, when you talk about being in state's care, I mean, you know, the typical, stereotypical story, is, of course, is that young people, children under the age of 18, are in the care of their parents. The parents provide a house for them, provide meals, make sure they get to school, make sure they have good clothes and a good lifestyle. Under state's care, who does that for you?
Well, first, there's many ways you can go about that. When I was in state's care, many times, regardless if I was in DJJ or DCBS, many times I was in a state facility, so there were strict rules. Hmm. I didn't get the freedom that I wanted. And many other times when I was in foster care, I never had it always made. Of course, I got three meals a day. I got to, you know, I got my own, I got to wear clothes. Well, that's parent, but... The thing about it is, it's not always, you know, the strict rules. It's just nerve-wracking. And then you don't get enough, like, privacy. You don't get enough peace. And you're with a bunch of kids all the time, which gets on your nerves.
So much uncertainty.
There's a lot of things that state's care don't provide. Hmm.
And how do you deal with that uncertainty? I mean, I imagine...
It's stressful.
I was going to ask, psychologically, that's got to be stressful for you. Are there services provided there? Is there counseling provided?
There's counseling, yes. But there's counseling, there's schooling. I've been to many different places in state's care, and I've been in many different types of school systems. And, you know, I think the worst part of all of it would be the fact that you're around so many people, you know, and a lot of them are very irritable to be around because, you know, some instigate, others don't know how to keep their mouth shut. It's just there's so much and there's so many people. And then on top of that, you get staff members that are just there and don't even care at times,
so,
you know.
James, when was the last time you lived at home with family? You're now 18.
Oh, man. I'm 18, right? When I was 13, it was the last time I was with my family.
Wow.
My mom and dad got divorced when I was 10. But when I was 13, it was the final time I was shipped off. This time I went into DJJ, and soon enough I got out into DCBS. This was so many years later.
Fallon, so many things to comment about here.
Yes, I think, you know, James brings up a point of stability and also a point of what we face with a lot of our youth is a lot of them come to us with some residual effects from being around people or being around a lot of people who may not have cared, whether it was other peers or parents or workers, teachers. Throughout their life, they've just been around too many people who didn't care. I think that's one of the greatest things about our agency. We make the youth feel welcome. We give them a place of safety, a place of stability, and we try to connect them with other resources in their community if they're not from Fayette County or within the community. And, you know, in James's case, I think we've watched a young man go from homeless to soon being housed. And as you can tell, he's a bright, wonderful young man that deserves all of these things. But at the beginning, when he came to us, didn't necessarily feel that he did.
I understand completely your emotion. It's touching to hear a story like this. Now, James speaks very well. Sounds like he's benefited from the education that he's received and the further education he's going to get in his life. But there sounds like he's had some opportunities that there are probably others who have not had. What about persons who have been dealing with substance abuse, persons who've been dealing with physical or sexual or emotional abuse at their homes, or that has gone on since they've left their homes? I mean, I assume there are many people out there who are not as well off as James and still needing care.
Yes.
And I hope to be an inspiration for them. That's honest to be, because I can understand that. I've been through a lot. Sexual, I've been through physical abuse, and I think that it's, you know, I've been, there's just, let me think here. Oh, man.
That's fine. We have time to pause and think as you need to, James.
There's a lot that I want to tell, and I just can't put it in a few sentences.
And you're doing such a great job. I'm very impressed for an 18-year-old.
Yeah.
I think James speaks to, though, a lot of the issues that our youth face. You know, in our shelter and in our programs that serve youth up to 24, we do see a lot of youth who have past trauma or issues that were not dealt with through childhood, whether it was a dysfunctional home, a violent home. They have dealt with things or not dealt with things in a lot of ways. And, you know, I think the motto of, a child who needs the most loved often shows it in the worst ways. We tend to get those youth who may be angry or may not necessarily know what they're supposed to do at this point. And, you know, our job and our goal is to hopefully point them in the right direction so they can actually make decisions and take access the opportunities that are available. Unfortunately, youth homelessness has not been in the spotlight a lot, but we do hope that, you know, through efforts such as this, that the word gets out that youth are experiencing homelessness.
James, we've got you on the telephone here, and I know technically it's difficult for us to have you speak with a caller who wants to talk to us on the show, but here's what we're going to try to do. I'm trying to coordinate with our board operator, Brian. If we could put James on hold, and then we could punch up the caller who's on the line. And then when James, after we talk to this caller for a moment, we'll punch back over and talk with you. Hopefully we won't lose you. And I'll tell Marissa, our producer, if we lose James, maybe we get him back on the line here. But can
I give you my number real quick? I think
Marissa may have it. Yeah, she's got it.
She should.
Yeah, so but hang in there. So we're going to see if we can put you on hold while we go to the phone and talk to Elizabeth, who's on the line here. So we just give that a try here. This is a little technical challenge for us. And so, Elizabeth, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Elizabeth, thank you for calling in. I know you have an important question that I think we need to include in this segment while we still have James on the line, and we'll get him back on here in a moment. Go right ahead.
Yes, well, this really wasn't specifically to James, but his story, listening to him, is really what prompted my comment and question. And that's one thing when we talk about homeless youth, the numbers of LGBT, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, homeless youth is more than double and triple in some areas of the country. And often what we find or what we hear is that homeless shelters are not, the staff or the facilities are not prepared to deal with LGBT homeless youth, in particular trans women who are turned away from women's shelters, who are then sent to men's homeless shelters where they're sexually assaulted, or trans men who aren't allowed into the women's spaces but then can't use the male spaces because they only have, like, the one large bathroom. And last year, Louisville, Kentucky, was actually one of the first cities in the U.S. that did a training on transgender inclusion for the Coalition of Homeless Shelters. And I'm wondering what we're aware of that Lexington's doing or other parts of the states are doing so that we can really outreach and service LGBT homeless youth, and particularly transgender homeless individuals. Because, again, we also know the homeless rate and the poverty rate of transgender individuals skyrockets that of the national average.
All right. Elizabeth, thank you so much for raising that. We're going to let you go so we can open that line back up and get James back in here. But let me toss that to Fallon and to Charlie and to Jenny. The diversity of services, the diversity of young people involved in needing of services for homeless persons today, and how is that dealt with?
Certainly, I would mention, one of the things that's changing about homelessness is certain subpopulations are seeing an increase. And those subpopulations, whether that's youth or the elderly and disabled or the severely mentally ill, they are groups that pose significant new challenges in the logistics of how you serve them, in the what types of programming is effective for them. You know, James has mentioned about being restricted and not wanting to follow rules. And that's not uncommon. You know, when you're 18, you don't like to be boxed in. I was 18. You know, and so the rules in a shelter maybe aren't set up to appeal to youth. And so sometimes youth are on the street because they just aren't going to work in that shelter environment. Speaking to the LGBTQ part of the comment in question, I absolutely agree. I think that is a big priority for us. HUD this year released the gender equality and equal access rule, which requires that any shelter that's receiving any federal dollar, whether that's basically any of the different HUD funds, which most of them receive, except for Jenny's organization, they pretty much all get something. They're required to serve individuals based on the gender that they identify with. So that's going to go a long way towards improving how transgender individuals are treated.
Is that going to change under the Trump administration, especially with the ruling, reversing the Obama ruling on guidance for transgender restroom use and so forth?
We've not heard anything thus far. I can tell you that policy came out through the federal rulemaking, regulation-making process, which is a long process. It's like a 6 to 12 month process. I would imagine that even if they did wish to change it, it would take some time for them to get to that. Of course, I've also thought that about some other things that have come out of the administration. So, you know, I don't know what to expect.
We're going to take another break. And if everybody can just hold on here, James is back on the line. We have with us in the studio Charlie Lanter, Director of the Office of Homeless Prevention and Intervention in Lexington Fayette County. We have with us Jenny Ramsey, Director of Catholic Action Center and Community Inn. Fallon Curtis is Associate Director for Arbor Youth Services in Lexington. And James Keeling, currently homeless, but soon to be housed and going to college shortly. We'll get back to our guests here in just a few moments. The phone line's open, 800-621-8890. Send us an email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Send a tweet at wekuest. It's Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. I'm John Hingsbergen. With us discussing homelessness in the Commonwealth of Kentucky, Charlie Lanter, Director of the Office of Homelessness Prevention and Intervention for Lexington Fayette County, Jenny Ramsey, Director of Catholic Action Center and Community Inn, Fallon Curtis, Associate Director of Arbor Youth Services in Lexington, and James Keeling, 18-year-old who seems to have beaten homelessness and is moving forward with his life. And we're going to keep James on for a few more minutes if you're able to stay with us, James. And
yes.
Great. I mean, let's see if Fallon and Jenny have some other comments about services for the diverse populations of young people who are homeless today, and then we'll come back
to you. In a moment, can I talk to you all about what led me into Lexington? Well, I just wanted to tell you more of my experience in Lexington.
Why don't you do it right now? You go right ahead, James. Absolutely.
When I got kicked out of the Life Connections in LaRue County, they took me up to here. I went to the Hope Center, and at first it was scary, you know? And
the Hope Center is a center for providing treatment and recovery services, right?
It's an emergency shelter.
Okay.
It's the emergency center.
Okay.
So I was kind of like ditched to the curb. It was scary. It really was. I was going to get 3 meals a day, but I knew nothing about Lexington. I couldn't even find Arbor Youth when I very first got here, you know. But I kept on staying near the people that I could trust. Like there was, I can't remember what her name is. She's, oh my good Lord. There was a lady. lady that did my intake, and that's who I stayed around. And she let me, and she got me an appointment with the Jacobs House. And soon enough, I was housed in the Jacobs House in a dorm, but I was still technically homeless because it was part of the Hope Center. And, you know, that's where I soon enough lived for all this long. And, you know, I found, trying to find the different places in Lexington, I didn't know all the dangers and stuff. I went to Lexington, my fault, excuse me. I went to the public library, the central one. I've been to, finding that was a hassle. And, you know, at first I couldn't find Arbor Youth. I went with a friend once because he's been there. His name was William. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the most difficult things is soon enough I didn't have him around. You know, I didn't know where he went. So that's where I would have to stay, is at the Hope Center or at the Jacobs House. And sure. Soon enough, they talked to me more about, when I was at the Jacobs House, about going to Arbor Youth, and they gave me a map. They almost acted like I knew where to go, but it was difficult because I'm not that person that you can just give instruction to. I learn by visual sight. Well, and it's better for someone to be with me so something bad doesn't happen to me.
Speaking of Arbor Youth, let's turn to Fallon. And Fallon, talk a little bit about the kind of services available the caller a few moments ago was concerned about making sure people are properly trained to handle folks of various diverse backgrounds.
Yes, we at Arbor are very inclusive. We actually had federal funding a couple years ago specifically for making our services unique to fit LGBTQ youth needs. But I think that's one of the greatest thing about our agency is that we've always been inclusive, and we've always dealt with this vulnerable population that needs privacy and needs confidentiality. And I think a crisis looks very different to a youth who is under 24. As James mentioned, they don't know their way around. They don't know the things they need to know, essentially. And so I think Arbor serves as a safety point where we can direct them or show them. And a lot of the times it takes actual, as some would say, hand-holding. They are kids. And to be homeless as a youth, James pointed out, to go to an adult shelter is a very scary process. So
it was.
So, yes, so, our shelter is very different from an adult shelter. We are much more on the side of a home-like setting. We, in our shelter for youth under 18, actually do family-style meals. We do a lot of life skill development, and we treat every case individually. So, as Charlie had mentioned, a lot of places do have to have restrictions for safety, and that is necessary in a lot of different places as far as adult shelters go. But with our youth, safety is always a priority, but we are able to be less restrictive. And the same goes for the program that James is actually a part of, which is our drop-in center.
I love it over there. It is an amazing drop-in center. It just absolutely is.
Thank you, James. Yes, we offer a lot of the same services, although we can't provide shelter for that age group. But we serve youth up to 24, and we allow them a place to do their laundry, take showers, make phone calls, do job applications, a variety of resources.
Okay, Fallon and James, hold on here. I want to turn back to Jenny Ramsey in a moment and talk about the services that she is providing at the Catholic Action Center and Community Inn. As we also remind our listeners that Eastern Standard is an interactive program, meaning we're glad to hear from you, glad to have your questions, your comments, your personal stories. Perhaps you've experienced homelessness, either yourself or someone, a friend or family. Give us a call at 800-621-8890. Send us an email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Send a tweet at WEKUEST. Thank you, Patricia, for the tweet saying that there's an excellent homelessness discussion on the air at WEKU. Glad to acknowledge that tweet at WEKUEST. So, Jenny Ramsey, your services, Catholic Action Center and Community Inn. So do you deal with homeless youth at all in the services you provide?
Often, but those who are 18 and under, we will send them to Arbor Youth. Mm-hmm. And the other folks that are sent to Arbor Youth is if there's a family that has children we do not take anyone under 18. So that sometimes the children will stay at Arbor Youth and the parents will stay either at the Hope Center, Salvation Army, or at the Community Inn, because we have both men and women on site at the Community Inn. But, you know, the most exciting thing I have to say is that beginning mid-April, we're going to have our 24/7 shelter, our House of Hospitality, which will encompass both Catholic Action Center, Community Inn, and will be a one-stop for a lot of folks, whether it is for youth that we will then – we partner a lot with Arbor. In fact, I was just meeting with their director talking about the things we'll be able to do at our 24/7 location with the youth. And we will be able to, strengthen the services that we offer for the youth once we're in one location.
But Jenny, I've been waiting to get a good update on how things are going there. I know we spoke maybe a couple of years ago when the decision had been made to consolidate the services and into a facility that you would hope to have ready, I guess, last year. Where do we stand? When does the new consolidated facility open up?
Well, it's being worked on right now. We plan to open our first night being April 13th. Now, that's always could change. We're at the end of the renovation time. It took until the end of October to close the deal. We did buy from the city their Industry Road property, and we're converting half of it into the 24/7 shelter. We're going to have, at a later date, in fact, this summer, we'll convert part of the other floor into a veterans homeless program. And then as soon as the state decides they're moving out, we will convert another section into transitional housing, which will open up some things for folks who it will possibly open up some for the 16 through 18-year-olds.
So what does that really
plan?
What does that really mean to the community, Jenny? Does that mean more homeless persons will be served? Does it mean it will be provided in a more economical or convenient or efficient manner? Does it mean
it'll definitely be more efficient? But the number one thing I like to say about it is it's going to provide more dignity and safety for our people, because they will not have to be at the center for meals during the day and then go to the inn at night. You know, they have to, even our elderly, disabled, et cetera, have to get from 400 East 5th to 824 Winchester Road. This will be a 24/7 location. We're also putting in a park, which will make it extremely nice, and a greenhouse for them to be able to have some things that will, you know, benefit them dignity-wise and otherwise. It is going to make a great change. And it excitingly is almost here.
Mm-hmm. This is Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. A few minutes remaining on this live broadcast on Thursday morning. If you'd like to get involved with a question, a comment, a story related to homelessness, 800-621-8890 is the best way for you to interact with us, because we may not have time to process an email. Or you can certainly send a tweet at WEKUEST, but that phone number, 800-621-8890. Back to Charlie Lanter, Fallon Curtis, and James Keeling. And James, glad you were able to stay on the line with us, because your story has really been very an important part of this conversation, talking about homeless youth in our community. Let me just ask you this before I forget to do so. What are your goals for life now? You're going to go to school.
Yes, sir.
Going to go for a college degree. What are you going to study, and what do you plan to do with your life beyond now?
Thanks to Arbor Youth and their help with getting me housed. I'm now going to be able to go to college. I need to get a science degree, but ultimately I'm going to become an acupuncturist one day.
Wow,
that's what I want to do.
Excellent. Providing direct service to patients. And what caused you to look at something like acupuncture as a career that you could pursue?
When I was in the 10th grade, someone told me about acupressure, and he gave me a little bit more. One of my teachers, his name was Mr. Mark. I can't remember his last name. And he knew a little bit about it, and he gave me more information about it. And it always intrigued me and fascinated me about how the nerves in your body works. You get what I'm saying? It's very possible to use that to heal. I've heard about it, how it can be used to knock people out. There's so many ways that you can go about that. But it's in acupuncture. See, at first I learned this about an acupressure, and later I learned there's a little bit more in acupuncture. It can relieve and heal headaches, nausea. It can help cure addictions. So there's a lot of things that acupuncture and acupressure can do.
So from all the difficulties and stresses you have had, and the things that obstacles you've need to overcome, you're planning to turn that into service and helping others. Let me turn back to Fallon and Charlie here in the studio. What kind of success rates do we see overall in terms of helping people to turn their lives around, people who've experienced homelessness in our communities and have gone on to getting an education, gone on to pursuing a career, gone on to living family lives and overcoming the obstacles that they've experienced? What are we seeing? Do we have any figures or is there any way of even measuring or tracking that?
I would like to say that we see it more than you would expect, but less than we would like. I can't speak directly to the adult population, but I know with our youth, a general sign of success is that they continue schooling, or that after they turn 18, if we were dealing with them before they turned 18, that they find stable housing. And what we do see is a lot of them, with our resources and with our help, do eventually find stable housing and pursue the things that can make them self-sufficient. But again, I think it kind of goes back to the root problems of, you know, cycles of poverty and amount of resources in communities. I think it's less than we would like.
I think speaking more generally, I would say, you know, once we house someone in a permanent housing situation, if we're measuring the effectiveness of that program, what we like to see is something in the neighborhood of an 80% to 85% success rate. You'll see a higher rate than that with low acuity individuals who maybe don't have severe addiction or severe mental illness. You'll see a lower rate, maybe in the 60% range, when you've got higher acuity issues. And there's other ways, too, that we measure progress. We look at shelters and we evaluate what's the average length of stay. Are they able to get folks out of homelessness in 30, 60, 90 days? What percentage of people are exiting the shelter to housing as opposed to just basically living in the shelter for extended periods of time? And that's something we've really tried to emphasize over the past couple of years with how the city funds shelters and what our priorities are as a community that's providing those funds is making sure we get a return on that investment in terms of actually reducing homelessness.
What does Lexington and Fayette County need in terms of better provision of homelessness services? Sounds like there's a big step moving forward here with the consolidation of the Catholic Action Center and the Community Inn. And that new facility opening up in just a couple of months. What else is needed? Where does the support come from? Are there volunteers needed? Are there organizations and churches and others needed to help support the services that are being provided?
One of the things we really need is affordable housing. We need units that these folks can rent in order to get off the street. And I'm talking about, you know, entry-level housing that is flexible, that the landlord is willing to give the person a second chance if maybe they've had an eviction in their past or they've got a felony on their record. You'd be surprised how often we're potentially able to house someone but unable to find a place that will rent to them. That can actually keep someone homeless. So, you know, when people say, how can I help? One of the things I say is, well, do you own property or are you a landlord or do you know one? Because the question you should ask yourself isn't just, you know, where should I donate or where should I volunteer, but how can I be a different kind of landlord? How can I be a different kind of employer? Can I hire someone who has a felony background? Can I be a second chance employer? You know, no one's asking you to take someone who was a convicted bank robber and make them a bank teller, but is there something they can do within the organization to support themselves, to make a living? You know, a lot of times that's what these folks need is just opportunity.
I agree with Charlie. I think affordable housing is the number one need. You know, especially for our youth, we come across that issue far more, I think, than you do necessarily with adults, because they have no credit history, or maybe they have bad credit history in a short amount of time. And they really don't understand housing laws or, you know, what an eviction actually would mean to them if that's happened. And often an income restriction that most of our youth are not capable of earning the income required to move into most apartments.
Jenny Ramsey?
Well, what do we need?
Yep.
I think that Charlie hit it, and I think that the affordable housing is number one. It's very scary to see what is happening with those places that have accepted HUD vouchers in the past. Now they're really disappearing as we get closer to 2020 because they're aging out and they're being sold as regular, you know, to companies that are going to, if you want to call it gentrify or just upgrade it and charge regular rents. You know, we have to be so thankful that the city started the Affordable Housing Trust Fund, but it can't keep up with it. And it's going to get worse just because of the timing that we're in, you know, the 25 to 30 year financing that required these projects to stay affordable housing. That time is coming up. And, you know, you have to have housing in order to be able to, for people to be able to afford housing. You
okay.
know, you have to have affordable housing.
Jenny Ramsey, I'm sorry, we're going to have to wrap up here. Jenny, we really appreciate your being part of our program today, Director of Catholic Action Center and Community Inn. Charlie Lanter, Director of the Office of Homelessness Prevention and Intervention for Fayette County. Fallon Curtis, Associate Director of Arbor Youth Services. James Keeling. James, thank you so much for being part of our program this morning. All the best to you, the best of luck and success in your future.
Thank you so much, and have a God blessed day.
Thanks to all of you for being part of our program. Eastern Standard is a production of the WEKU stations at Eastern Kentucky University. Associate producers for the show, Marissa Hempel and Devonna Gaines, with some help from Noah Day. Our technical director is Brian Bartlett. Join us again next week for Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations.